My sophomore year of college, I came back home for 3 weeks, winter break. But when I came home on winter break, my mom didn't let me out the door without asking me if I needed a sweater. My dad would literally come in and open up the blinds because I slept in too late. If I stayed out past 9 p.m., I'd get a million texts asking where I was. When are you coming home? I was the worst of all. I would stomp out of a room in a huff. My texts to my mom were all caps, ultimate yelling teenager. No matter what I did, I reverted to old behaviors and was just stuck. So 6 months later, I'm back at school and I get a call from my mom. Your dad's been having heart pain, so we're gonna take him to the hospital for an angiogram tomorrow. That's when they pass dye through a person's arteries to figure out if they have blockage and if they need a stent or a surgery. I remember my dad putting on the hospital gown and going off to the operating room. And we were all making fun of him and how silly he looked. And like 5 minutes later, the doctor comes back out. And she's like, all of your dad's arteries are like 99% blocked. If he leaves the hospital now, he could die of a heart attack any second. They schedule him for bypass surgery at 7 a.m. the next morning. My dad recovered fine. But honestly, he came back a little different. He's so much more patient now. He even sleeps in himself. It kind of makes sense. I mean, he came close to death. And I changed too. I still revert to shitty teenage Misha when I go home. And I mean, we still argue sometimes. My dad still nags me and expects me to win the Olympics and the Nobel Peace Prize all at once. But the pattern broke when he had the surgery. We both see each other a little differently now. Like it widened the aperture of how we could see each other. I'm Misha Youssef. This is Tell Them I Am. Wazina Zondon is a sex educator.
I am the eldest of four, so there's me, Wazina, and my sisters, Zarina and Sangina, who are about 11 years younger than I am. And it's funny because I realize that even when I talk about my siblings, I say Zarina, Sangina, Wazina, and then there's Adam. Adam and I are 18 months apart. He's 18 months younger than I am. And we grew up very close to one another, or forced to be close to one another. My mom always said, like, you don't need friends. I birthed you three other siblings. But because Adam and I were still so close in age, but also because of our genders, and you know, within the context of being Afghan and Muslim and first generation in the United States, we couldn't have had more different upbringings. You know, very much entrenched in a double standard. He was sort of treated like a prince and did whatever he wanted, while I was like the overachiever and overcompensator for any shortcomings that he had. So I was more like the second mom, and Adam was a child. Adam is and was left-handed, and it was an interesting point of contention between my parents and my grandparents and aunts and uncles, who, because using your left hand in Islam carries some negative baggage and connotation, you shouldn't be eating with it, it's not a clean hand. I just think back at, like, God, that meal probably didn't taste good to him if he was being critiqued or given such crappy feedback for something that's so innate, just to use your left hand. And even his handwriting was always pretty poor. And I think there was always this like thought that like he's messy and he doesn't write well because he uses his left hand.
As little kids, Wazina and Adam would hang out with each other all the time.
I think Adam and I were more cuddly, playful. And maybe that's just because we were also just younger, where like there is no reason for you as brother and sister or boy and girl to not be playful and just do everything together. I grew up in Flushing in Queens. It's a really super, super diverse community, a very residential. It's like as suburban as you can get in a borough. We would go to the park probably, I would say like about a couple of times a week. The park we were in is called Bound Park, and I think it's still there in Queens in Flushing. My primary memory of it is just a lot of like earth tones and brown, not very lush, but I do remember there being this like brick all around us. And we were playing in what I think must have been like a sand box or sand pit. And I was playing, and all I remember was this kind of sharp pain, but it also felt really hot on the top of my head. And then all the screeching and screaming of my mom and my maybe aunts or whoever were there. Adam had thrown either a loose brick or a rock into the sand pit, and it hit the back of my head. You know, clearly, I don't think my like 4 or 5-year-old brother was trying to take me down, but it created this internalized like rift between the two of us that maybe we weren't actually as close. I don't know if I really internalized this as something, but I think somewhere in my brain, maybe it was other folks also being like, your brother hit you in the head. So in my kid brain, you make meaning. And so I think I made meaning of it as like Adam and I are, maybe there's like, this is like a pivot moment where like you're not as close or he doesn't like you. Or more than that, I don't think I'm supposed to like you now. We had this like a little bit of a crack in our foundation.
The lens with which Wazina sees Adam and he sees her narrows. The two of them don't have the relationship that Wazina has with her sisters. She has her sisters' names tattooed on the back of her arms. She tells them everything. They're all super cuddly and loving with each other. But with Adam, there's a barrier.
It was a Friday, and I want to say it was like springtime or maybe fall, but it was still like a really nice Friday where it wasn't dark yet. It was after school. All the neighbors were out playing, which when I reflect back on being a kid, I don't ever remember a moment really where my mom was super involved in socializing while we were playing or like talking to the other moms, but somehow all the kids in the block were out on this Friday afternoon after work, after school. And it was a pretty narrow block. Our street was pretty narrow. So to go across the road, just across the street, it wasn't even a road. It was like, it probably was like 10 steps. And I remember Adam probably getting permission to go across the street, but he was just going from one driveway to the next across the road. And in my young brain, the car was like speeding past, and all I knew was that I looked up and Adam had been hit by the car, and he was like up in the air, and they like hit the ground. And then again, much like that, being in that sandbox, there is the screaming, the yelling. The women in my family are great at emoting and screaming and crying. So she was just, just like yelling and crying. And also the neighbors and like the kids were responding to what had happened. So everyone was like screaming. And I just kind of stood there and realized my brother had been hit by a car. And very quickly, I think the ambulance came and my mom went off with Adam in the ambulance. And I was taken across the street to Debbie's house to wait for my uncle to pick me up. Debbie was my neighbor that lived across the street from us. That night, my uncle Abdullah came to pick me up, and he had a red sports car. I remember, it had tapes all over it, and I remember being driven to the hospital, and we listened to Duran Duran, No Ordinary World, like on repeat. I still remember that song and that car. When Adam got hit, I had a moment where I think I was, afraid that like I had lost him, and a sense of mourning, which I don't know if I really felt like I was mourning then, but I can maybe go think back now, and a sadness for who he was supposed to be for me, and maybe all the things that he was actually for me that I never gave a lot of credit or mind to. I never like really acknowledged how essential Adam is, because I've never known my conscious life or being without my brother.
Adam broke his collarbone, so his whole left arm is in a sling so it can heal, which meant he couldn't use his left hand, his dominant hand.
But after that, I felt like a more of a responsibility to him and for him afterwards, especially when he broke the collarbone. He broke, he couldn't do his homework. And so I had to take on helping him with his homework. And so I would write his homework for him. But, and I think back on this now, but I would write his homework for him in my left hand because it would match his bad handwriting. I think in some ways I wanted him to know that I was okay with it, that if you can't use your left hand, I'll use my left hand for you.
Years pass. They both graduate. Adam goes to jail, and Wazina goes to college. More time passes. Wazina starts her career as a sex educator. Adam gets engaged, and the whole family's planning a wedding. Adam and Wazina rarely talk. So it's getting closer to the wedding. Wazina's in line at a Target one day with her partner at the time, and her phone rings. It's Adam.
All the things that I was had done up until that point have always done with, like, bated breath or just, like, kind of, like, always waiting for the other shoe to drop, to be found out, essentially.
The other shoe was that she's gay. Adam gets on the phone and tells Wazina that
he got a phone call from my uncle, the same uncle in the red sports car, saying something to him along the lines of, like, just so you know, like, there's a lot of stuff about Wazina on the internet. She could really compromise your wedding. She could really compromise how the other family, you know, accepts your family because there's some, like, really, like, loaded stuff or, like, or not, maybe, I think said loaded, but, like, there's some, like, just bad stuff about her that's, like, controversial and just, like, it's going to ruin your reputation. And the stuff that's out there on the internet is whatever is out there about Wazina Zandan being queer and Muslim, and I think I'm just, like, saying that, yes, I am both queer and Muslim. And when Adam told me this, I started panicking because if this uncle knows and every uncle knows and this is a really big deal, this is, like, my worst nightmare coming to fruition because now the families are talking. And then my brother said, you know, I looked up what our uncle said, and he's like, you do great things. Like, you have fans out there. he's like, you know, I think he's making a big deal out of it. But, and just so you know, like, I support you. Adam did say something along the lines of, like, I wish, if you could, like, maybe you shouldn't just openly say you're gay and Muslim. To which I think I said something like, Adam, I'm only saying it's okay for me to be gay and Muslim because everyone else says that I can't be gay and Muslim, and I am. So I'm just saying that I am. And he's like, oh, okay, I get you.
All these years, Wazina sees Adam one way. Adam sees Wazina one way. But when their uncle sees Wazina in that one way, when he pigeonholes her, Adam's instinct isn't to agree. It's to defend her.
For Adam to defend me, and to just also, more than that, Adam, like, affirmed me. Like, it was the first time I think I got a family member, you know, other than my sisters, being really loving and affirming. And it really meant everything because then I felt like other shoe dropped in this moment where even if every family member, even if my parents have been looking me up, and I don't think they have been, but even if they had been, no one had actively or outwardly said it or named it, and it happened. And that was, like, my biggest nightmare. And it did happen, and Adam, like, received it with as much grace as he could, which was to say, like, I support her. And I think he kind of, like, I think in that moment also deflated this thing that could have been this really big deal and just kind of, like, stopped it right then and there.
You can learn more about Wazina on comingoutmuslim.com. Thanks for listening to Tell Them I Am. I'm Misha Youssef. This episode of Tell Them I Am was sound designed by me and written by me with help from James Kim and Arwen Nix. Mary Knopf is my producer, and don't tell James Kim, but she's way more sassy than him. Arwen Nix is the podcast boss here at KPCC, and she is also our ridiculously stylish editor. Valentina Rivera and Sean Corey Campbell are our engineers. Our tile art is by the talented Stephanie Kraft. Our beautiful music is by David Leinard. You can find incredible illustrations of all of our guests as the episodes release. Thanks to Emin Ahmed for those. You should really see them. Just go to kpcc.org/tellthem or follow me on Instagram or Twitter @MishaYusuf. We'll be back tomorrow with another story.